The Theory of Not Quite Everything by Kara Nodder, read by Pippa Bennett-Warner. For Jamie, Tom and Freya, with love. Rationalists wearing square hats think in square rooms. Wallace Stevens. It is by logic that we prove, but by intuition that we discover. Henri Poincaré. Chapter 1. Recurring. 2012. Time, T, equals zero. When Mimi stands at her door, she knows that the news is not good. Her body is familiar with the rules. Miss Brotherton? Naomi? She points inside to invite the police officers in. Her words won't come. It's a man and a woman. They brush non-existent fluff from their sleeves as they step across the threshold. They have the appearance of suicide bombers, packaged with padding and badges and belts and clips, a walkie-talkie each, many pockets. But it's terrible information, not a device, that they're about to detonate. They take up so much space in her hallway, she has to inch around them to lead the way down the passage to the kitchen, where she can ask the question she thinks she knows the answer to. Is he dead? She pushes the post on the floor with her foot as if to tidy up. She sees his name on an envelope. She pulls her jumper down to straighten herself out and smudges imagined mascara residue from beneath her eyes, attending to some abstract decorum required for these moments, just before everything falls apart. It's impossible to prepare someone for the news of a loved one's death, but there are rules for such moments, and Mimi has seen them in action before. She'd tell you, don't procrastinate. The person will already know something is wrong from your demeanour, from the fact that you're calling or visiting at all. We send countless signals without knowing. Their body will be preparing for an emergency. Use plain and simple language. Start by saying the person has died. This leaves no room for doubt. Don't use euphemisms like passed on or they're in a better place now. Lost is particularly unhelpful. Just imagine. The truth is essential. You may need to repeat yourself, and don't make promises that you can't keep. Mimi's always been grateful that she was told by professionals. Dead straight. She remembers last time, sitting on the corner of the coffee table, staring at a dry cleaning tag that her mother had left on the rug. Her brother Art was talking. The police officers had gone. We need to break this down into parts, Art had said, in a voice stunned into the rhythm of a metronome. He'd looked around as if for a ruler with which to measure the parts of the shattered whole. And, he said, his voice faltering, plan for our future together. Yes, said Mimi. And, just like that, he took her hand. This time, standing in her passage, she's barefoot and alone. The police follow in their boots, and she feels like a prisoner with an army walking behind her, past the mirror where her reflection is of a different person to the one who walked this hall a minute ago, checked herself in the glass and plumped her lips. The officers step into the kitchen, still holding their hats out in front of them. Can I offer you something? She says. Tea would forestall them, but they never accept anything. We're all right, thank you, says the man. Perhaps you'd like to sit down, says the woman. There's no going back now. Mimi lowers herself onto the sofa, her arms wanting to reach for her brother, for him to be there with her while she does this, but already she knows that will not be possible. Is it Art? She says. My brother. Miss Brotherton. Is he dead? She hears herself say. My brother, he's dead, right? The room dissolves into strips that are floating away. Nothing has substance. Light swallows matter. Your brother's had an accident. He's in hospital and he... Hospital? He's okay. She snatches up her jacket in one movement. Perhaps take a moment. The officer points back to the sofa,